This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick the Week Podcast, episode 335, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you.
I'm thinking about my doorbell, when you gonna ring it? When you gonna ring it? Yeah, I'm thinking about my doorbell, when you gonna ring it? When you gonna ring it? Yeah, I'm thinking about my doorbell, when you gonna ring it? When you gonna ring it? Yeah, I've been thinking about my doorbell. Oh, well. Well, with my chips and your kids, there's not the man in my life.
Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week Podcast, episode 335. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan with a lowercase L.
Was that like a slight Christopher Walken?
I was.
35? You did a thing.
I don't do voices.
Well, you may not have meant to, but you did.
We are from the website iFanboy.com that is all about the love of comic books. We just ooze with love of comic books. And every week we read a
book. You do that Southern guy, the Colonel.
Every week. I haven't done the Colonel in a long time.
That's a mistake.
Every week we read a large stack of comic books, and then one of us writes a pick of the week review on the website at ifanboy.com. Then we come back here to talk about a lot of the comic books that came out, and we hear about what you thought of them. We kvetch, we chat, we do the whole thing. Now I'm channeling Steve Summers. Before we get to the show, for those of you playing at home, a quick reminder / warning. This is a review show. We're going to talk about what happens in the books. So if you get your book spoiled, it's not our fault.
What happened there?
I tried to do Steve Summers and then I lost it.
That was like Mike Francesa for a second.
No, that would be a lot more sedate.
That's three. You do voices?
You see, the Mike Francesa is actually a sedated Dan DiDio voice.
Yes.
I don't know what these comics are supposed to be. They should be illegal.
I don't know who they think they're fooling.
I don't know.
This week, Connor has the pick. Connor, take it away.
It was a big week.
Big week. Such a big week.
They backed the truck up and dumped comics on us.
They did.
And, the thing was, they were mostly pretty good.
Yeah.
So it was a week where, you know, if you have a week like this where I had like almost 30 books, where if they're not good, you really hate your life and your comics and everything like that's going on. But I was plowing through the stack because it was a really good, fun week of books. But at the end of the day, and I was really hoping it wasn't going to be this book because we've picked it and its companion book quite a bit. For good reason. It's a great book, but I was just like, oh, man, again. And that sounds like I had a negative reaction, but I didn't. But it's just kind of like, you know, you don't want it to be the same book over and over, but it was Fantastic Four 605.1, which I wasn't happy about picking a .1 book, but what are you going to do? It was the best. We talked about this last time I picked a Fantastic Four book and when Ron picked the FF book. Hickman's run is over, pretty much. His epic story's ended. He's just fucking around now.
And I kind of like that the most.
I respect the hell out of it. He's just telling one-shot stories.
And they're just like, hey, we need a point one. He's like, all right.
And the funny thing was, and you don't know if they'll believe it or not, because comic book marketing is always taken with a huge grain of salt, but in the back page, they were like, Hickman had this story to tell. We had nowhere to put it. So we said, yeah, let's just put it in a point one issue. So what this issue is basically it is a what-if story. And this is funny because I mentioned this in my review. I was at a comic store earlier this week. I never looked through the back issue bins, but I had to kill some time. And I started looking through, and I found the what-if trove. And I went through that section remembering all the what-if books I used to love.
I love the what-if.
And what we have here is basically a what-if story. And
it's not a what-if story because it
takes place in an alternate Earth, and it ties into the end, which we'll get to in a minute. But it's basically a what-if story at its heart. It's what if the Nazis had won World War II, and then Fantastic Four, works for Hitler and goes, it's basically what would the Fantastic Four be like in a world where the Nazis won World War II?
Yeah,
it's the basic premise of the story in that Hitler wants to explore space. Dr. Reed Richards, who works for Hitler, is tasked with finding a team. They get Sue and Johnny Sturm, who are the most ruthless soldiers in the army, apparently. And then they pull Ben Grimm out of the concentration camp in Boston, which is the entire city, because he's the best pilot.
That was the only thing that made sense.
Yeah, he was Jewish. pilot. And then they find Dr. Doom, and so then they go into space. It's basically the origin story told through the lens of a what-if tale of what if the Fantastic Four lived in a world with the Nazis won World War II. But it ties into the regular Marvel continuity when it's revealed that this Reed is actually one of the Reeds from the Council of Reeds.
The bearded Reed.
We met a while ago. But this was creepy. It was when Reed discovers Dr. Doom, who's as smart as he is, who's got some great ideas, he cuts up his brain and puts it in his own brain. and I don't know how the, I don't even know how the,
I did that once.
I don't even know how the medical science works for that, but apparently just cut your head open, take another dude's brain, stiff it in there, and it melds with your brain.
That's how it works.
And then
exactly how it works.
The Fantastic Four come down. They're not quite as mutated the way you remember them being mutated, or they are mutated in the regular world. Thing looks different. Johnny's an ice person.
Sue's got fire.
Is that the politically correct way to put it? He's an ice person.
He's an ice person. And so then basically Reed uses the Fantastic Four to kill Hitler, take over the government, and become the ruler of the planet. He fights the Magneto. He fights the X-Men. He fights the Avengers, and he gets the Fantastic. It basically becomes sort of a montage scene at the end until he reaches the point where we met him originally in the other Fantastic Four world. It reminded me of those great books that I read where you just take a familiar Marvel story, you put a twist on it, you see how it changes.
And you get lost. You just get totally lost.
Yeah, and it's just fun. And it also is very similar tonally to the Manhattan Projects, which also came out this week, which we're going to talk to about in a minute, in that you take history, you change it, you add a little fantastical element to it, you add some sci-fi to it, and you use historical characters. And in that sense, reading these two books almost back-to-back this week was really interesting because it's very much similarly written.
He's just double-dipping on his research.
And I love the fact that, I don't know if they do it intentionally, but they basically keep making Reed Richards into a really bad guy.
Yeah. Someone got the bug in it where that Reed as villain, and that's been and Hickman and Bendis and especially over in the Ultimate Universe, they've been just running with that. Reed as villain.
The Ultimate Universe. Yeah. He's pretty much a bad guy in Marvel Civil War.
Yeah.
And now here this is Reed, using his brain to take over the world and be a bad dude.
Well, he's like, science without morals, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just is a force of intelligent nature.
Total
I guess.
Pursuit of curiosity and
yeah.
It's also the nature of a dictator to say, I know what's best and I'm going to make everyone do what I say because I'm the smartest guy there is. So in that sense, he's a natural dictator.
Yeah.
He's Dr. Doom, basically.
Yeah.
But I loved the heck of this. I loved every bit of it. I loved Evil Reed. I loved the twists and turns. I loved the little montage. I mean, I love the fact it was a one-shot story that also tied into the overall story that Hickman's been telling. I think the fact that he's doing his one-shots is great. They're a nice change of pace. I mean, you can read this story without knowing anything about his run.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. And I guess that's why it fits as a point one, but it easily could have been one of the issues and because it explores the Council of Reeds. And I mean, honestly, I would read the last page shows all the Council of Reeds and all the various Reeds. I would read an issue for each one of these to know where they came from.
Right.
Like I love alternate universes. I love, like all that whole concept and playing, like you said, playing with a concept and tweaking it slightly. And I want to know why there's a Cyclops Reed and why there's a on fire Reed and why there's a stony guy with a cape on Reed,
we call it fire person.
yeah, I know. I thought this was great, but I don't know if it deserves the total heralding because if you ask me, Mike Choi is not very good. But although this is probably the best Mike Choi we've seen in a while.
Yeah, I think by far. The last time we saw him, I think for me, was Green Lantern. And that was a disaster.
That was
a disaster.
So bad.
But I thought his style was much more appropriate here. even had a little bit of a Nick Patara feel to it.
Yeah. It was super cleaner. I don't know how much the colorist, I've never heard of this colorist, but Chris Peter, I think the colorist really helped him a little bit because there's no inker on it.
Yeah.
And I think he clearly needs an inker or somebody to help him. but yeah, I was surprised that this was probably the better Mike Choi than we've seen. But even then, you know, it's still a little lackluster in that regard. But the story concept, I guess, picks up for the poor art. So
a point one issue.
Yeah,
especially a jumping on.
There's no rhyme or reason to the point one issues.
I realize
it's complete. Yeah, it's a complete. It's a and the original intended concept is so far gone. So
it didn't work. So
yeah. So it just
this is not a jumping on point. You wouldn't take this issue and follow forward. It's not what that. It's just not. And
it's just because they took it. I guess it's a way that they don't have to do. I don't want to say mini series, but like one shots that aren't related. But if you put it in the numbering, then people will buy it.
But if he's doing a series of one shots for the rest of the year, then why not just make like I'm curious what 606 is going to be. You know,
it's just dumb. The whole thing is dumb. But I don't really care.
These kind of issues used to just be. They just show up
exactly.
Every once in a while.
Which I think you can still do. There's nothing wrong
with
that.
You totally can do it. It would be great.
Yeah.
Well, Grant Morrison couldn't get away with it in Action Comics. Seriously.
Yeah, he could.
Yeah, that last issue was great.
It was awesome. Yeah.
All right. Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, when it wasn't good.
Well,
so
when the story's bad, they don't get away with it.
The other thing is he interrupted his story halfway through. It wasn't like he finished something.
Yeah. It's got to be good.
Now, the other book that was almost picked with Justice League number 9, which I think is... If you can take two issues in a row, it's officially on a roll. I think the problem with this book originally was that it started in a weird place.
Yep.
And the story didn't really get going until you got to the present. And I don't know that they effectively mined the past. Let's not worry about the past. Let's worry about the present. The present is this character, Graves, who we've been teasing. They've been teasing in these books for a while. Is this writer, and he's got cancer or some sort of disease. And the Justice League didn't save him. They weren't the gods he thought they were. And so he becomes a villain. But... To me, this is great character work, great Jim Lee art.
I thought ostensibly this could be, like, if you haven't been reading Justice League,
number one point.
Yeah, you could totally jump on here. I thought, you know, it was almost like this should have been the first issue almost, you know?
Like the nines across the board have been.
Yeah.
They have been kind of written that way, which is strange. Yeah. Maybe it's after the trade.
And it's also like they're just introducing their second wave now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah. All right, good job, DC.
What I thought was interesting was we see the presence of the Flashpoint letter.
Yes.
So that still exists. That's still in play. And honestly, not doing the Gary Frank Shazam as a regular series is a crime because the Shazam stuff I'm loving more than the Justice League.
Well, I think it's because he can handle doing five pages.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
You know, if you ask him to do 22 or 20, it's not going to work.
This has been great.
No, the Shazam story is wonderful.
Yeah, the Shazam story is really good. Really good.
And it's Billy's first day at school. But I think Justice League has been really – I think the little touches to the looking back at all the characters and seeing their little brief little histories, this is a great issue of Justice League. Great characterization of Superman, you know, being the Daily Planet, and Lois takes the whole staff out to lunch except for Clark and he's got nothing to do until Batman texts him to ask him to see his lunch plans, which is actually to go fight crime. And it's just it was a great little issue. I think this is the stuff you thought Geoff Johns would write when he was announced as the writer of Justice League.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
The other book, there was three great books I read this week. One was Fantastic Four, one was Justice League, the other was Fury Max number 2.
Oh, this is so good.
I bought this, but because number 1 came late, I forgot to read that, so I didn't get to read this.
This book is for you.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Just one sentence sums it up. Jesus Christ, you fucking incredible bitch. And the response,
how that's any different than most of our conversations.
The response, you silver-tongued bastard. I mean,
and then they have sex.
Right as they finish. It's amazing. This is, Ennis and Parlov are just killing it on this book. This book is so good. It's.
This is old school Ennis.
Yeah.
This is the Ennis we used to love all the time.
But the thing is it's not extreme, like out there.
It's military, which is what he's great at. It's a hard-nosed character, which is what he's great at.
Yep.
But it's also the fun of seeing Nick Fury, you know, doing stuff he's not allowed to do in the 616 universe. And Parloff is a great companion to his work.
Yeah.
He's not an artist I'm very familiar with, but he's really, really solid.
Well, they worked together on Punisher Max.
All right. Oh, that's right.
So they're being kind of reunited on this, but this is like this. I'm two issues in, and I'm like, oh, why is this only three issues?
I don't think it's three. I think it's 12.
I thought it was three.
No, I think they've already solicited past three.
Oh, okay, then I'm wrong. Good. I'm glad then that we win. I thought it was a 3-issue mini.
It's wonderful. Yeah. And I really wish, Josh, you'd gotten a chance to read it because...
I'm really looking forward to it. I just
It's Nick
forgot.
Fury in Indochina right before the Vietnam War explodes and with...
Hiding in a bowl of rice?
With his CIA handlers and ex-German French Foreign Legion commanders that he's got to work with. And this issue, they were attacked by the Viet Cong, or I guess whoever you want to call them back then, the natives. And there's a giant, bloody, brutal battle in the middle of it.
Nobody wins.
What's the year? Is it?
It's 54.
God, that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
That's so good.
Well, talk about fantastic. My pick of the week, again, was Manhattan Projects number 3. And it just like each issue just gets deeper and a little wider and a little more crazy, and had the most fun reading this issue.
So for me, I liked it. I thought the same thing with Saga, which we'll get to in a minute. I thought they both were very sort of low key issues, which were fine. Well, it's not a bad thing.
This wasn't low key at all. This was the bomb. This is the story of the atom bomb, the real Manhattan Projects. And we find out that when FDR died, the Manhattan Projects took his body, shoved the thing in his head, and sucked out FDR's intelligence and are going to create an FDR robot.
Yeah, the supercomputer FDR.
That's fantastic.
And the hand wringing Truman.
Yes, exactly.
That's a very different Truman story than I'm used to.
Yeah. The hand-wringing Truman was fantastic, where Truman getting a phone call 2 minutes after getting sworn in from the general going, we have to decide whether you want to drop this bomb. And he's just like, no. And he's like, oh, and I can't hear you.
On the one hand, laughing at Hiroshima is not funny.
That is true.
On the other hand, as a comedic set piece, it's very funny.
Yeah. No, I mean this.
What? What's that?
What's so?
What's
so fun? What's so interesting about this? Like the opening prelude, the first two pages of the Einstein, where you know he's just staring at that monolith, and what's his name, Feynman, comes in and says, "Hey, we need your help. We're working on the bomb project, and we've got two solutions to deliver it, and we can't figure out which one." And just Einstein being just. Point to the point, just build them both, and just like, and it just sets the stage, and then the issue just gets crazier.
He's one of the reads.
Yeah, it gets crazier and crazier, and then you get to this one splash page, which is dead FDR in his wheelchair. Right? And I just was like, oh shit. And then they go to find, so FDR dies, and they go to find Truman, and what is he doing? He's in full Masonic uniform leading some sort of Masonic thing, and the Secret Service burst in to take him to go swear him in. Just like, it's touching on every little conspiracy theory, nerve, craziness, like what if all this stuff was true? And it's playing with that history kind of history's mysteries kind of aspect to it. And each issue surprises me in ways that I can't expect. And this book probably gets the nod because the last page features, which probably should have been the first page or the inside cover, but a page of the cast.
Yeah.
So, which really helps because it tells you who they are. You get a picture of their head and what they're known for. And these are even funny too. Like Einstein, super genius, German physicist, drinks. Richard Feynman, super genius, American physicist, invented hair gel. Oh, yeah. That's great.
No, it's good. It's just that we've settled in now, and that's so the pacing is a little different. So
Harry S. Truman, not a genius, American president, Freemason. It's great.
Hickman's gonna get murdered.
I know. I really think so. He's really dancing on graves. I don't know. I love it. I think it's great. It's so good.
Scalped 58 time because there's only 3 issues left.
Is it 2 left?
This counts as the third. So yeah, 59 and 60 to go. We're starting right off at the cover. Skeleton face, graveyard, Carol face. That's nuts. That's amazing. By the way, Jock did not get nominated for an Eisner, which is the dumbest thing in the history of time. B, I can't believe he shot him.
Yeah.
And there was a really good shootout, and Dash shaved his head again, which I thought was helpful for recognition, but also thematic purposes as well.
It was the B.A. Baracus moment.
Yeah, it's totally ramping up, and the pacing has been so strong through these last few. That you sort of, it's not that it's light, it's just that you're flying through it because you want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Everything fits. There's nothing happening here. It's like, we've got to end this story, so have somebody do something that's not in character. It's all just ticking along, and it's so much fun. I'm really looking forward to a satisfying conclusion.
The thing that I love about this is there's no predicting anything.
No, I have no idea what's going to happen.
There's a lot of things that happen in this issue that there's no way you would have known. And I love the fact that the kid who we met many issues ago, who...
And we've seen from time to time.
Yeah, but who's sort of innocuous. He was a nice kid in the beginning. Bad stuff happened to him. And now he's kind of being set up as the new Red Crow, which, you know, it would fit into the theme of this book, because it's just bad shit happens to people all the time.
There's a power vacuum. Somebody's got to grab it. Why not me?
And the scene with Carol and Red Crow in the grocery store, where she was $1.38 short of her food, and he had a $100 bill, wouldn't give her any money, and she didn't put the food back.
There were a lot of red herring type scenes. You thought, oh, okay, Red Crow and Dash are going to team up. Nope, no, they're not. Oh, he's going to help his daughter, and they're going to reconcile. No, they're not. That's not how this is going to go.
Yeah, which makes me terrified for the ending.
Yeah, yeah,
which is great, because you shouldn't know what's going to happen. You shouldn't be able to predict it. Although it should feel natural and organic and like it makes sense, you shouldn't still be able to predict what happens, which is the best kind of writing.
Yeah. Also very good this week. That was actually I don't want to say it was a surprise, but The Shade number 8, which was sort of one and done story in this with Jill Thompson on art, not looking like Jill Thompson, but looking a lot more like Steve Dillon, actually.
Yeah, I was actually a little disappointed by the art. When I saw Jill Thompson was doing it, I was expecting flowery and
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, no, I didn't think it was bad. I was just surprised to see that it was very traditional sequential.
In the same sense, it was very Big Two style.
Yeah.
It was traditional sequential, but not in a style that the Big Two would ever put in a book normally.
Yeah. Well, further, just felt like it made it feel more like a Vertigo book.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I loved this story.
Yes.
I loved the fact that he met his grandson or great-grandson, and they were in an opium house.
Yeah.
And there was no, like, all the morals of everything. I thought that Robinson's prose all through this, from the dialogue to, you know, the sort of the Shade journal part, was fantastic. It was just so fun to read. And I was finding myself really falling in love with the words. And it's one of those times where you can rarely get away with people talking like that in comics and having it not be hokey, but it worked in this really well. And I think that I know that we're however 8 mini issues in or something like that, and this comes out every 4 minutes, as far as I know. But he's actually like, the Shade's starting to feel more and more like the Shade to me as we keep going, as opposed to like a little bit like, oh, it's been a while. Is this exactly right? It felt good. It was fun. The times passed, basically. Like,
it was.
That's,
always
that's what the it cover says on the cover, A Tale of Times Past.
Yeah, I loved it.
I love that, except for the brief scene in the middle, it's mostly just a conversation between the Shade and his grandson.
Yeah, with one side knowing and one not.
Yeah, this is like a slipping into a comfortable jacket or something. This just you slide back into this world that he created all those years ago, and it fits perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't feel bad, like, going back and being like, this isn't like it was, you know, which can happen sometimes in comics and other things. Great, great issue. Another, you know, like, I was handing out 5 stars like they were candy this week,
mm-hmm.
which was great.
That's what it's to do.
Another wonderful thing is that we are brought to you by, and we are part of, Graphically.com, which is a comic book store. That's one thing you can do to get digital comics that way. But another way, if you are a creator or a publisher and you want to get your stuff out to the world, then Graphically.com has what we think is a very, very good solution to do that. If you have, you know, previously been on a comic book store, you know that digital or otherwise, you know you have to get comic book people to go there. But what if you could take all your stuff and easily put it into all the sort of major digital bookstores, whether they went into Amazon Kindle or Barnes & Noble Nook or Kobo or iBookstore or any of that stuff, the place where people have those devices and people are looking for books there. We see that as a really good way for creators to get their stuff in there. And what we've done is come up with a really good way for you to do that. So get over to graphically.com and you can sort of find out about how that works if you're a creator. And also, you know, if you want to just use the, if you want to put your stuff up on the free tools, you can have it up on Facebook. You can have it up on the Graphically Marketplace. There's all sorts of really great marketing and branding tools for creators to use in that way. And it's just a lot of really good opportunities for you to get your stuff out there. From a creative standpoint. And then, you know, if you're just a reader, there's dozens and hundreds of really wonderful books on the system by indie creators from all across the spectrum, you know, all the way up through current books from that you know and love already.
Cool.
So get over there and see what we got for you.
Excellent.
Guys.
It's a big week.
Guys, it's a big week. So
you know what that means.
We were talking before the show, trying to figure out what to talk about in the show. We couldn't fit on a normal 10 or 11 books, so it's time for...
Not only is it that, but it's super, Connor. It's super bell time.
It's super bell time. Now, if you haven't heard this before, I don't know the last time we did the bell, but it's been a while. I don't remember. When we have an overload of books we want to talk about, we can't decide what to do, we bring out the bell, and that means each one of us has 15 seconds to talk about a book, and then the bell rings, and you have to move on to the next book. There's a lot of books. We've never done this many books at a bell segment before.
Well, basically,
this is a historic show.
Yeah, the reason why we're doing Super Bell is because there were so many books we wanted for the first time ever, in honor of the Super Bell, to review every book we read, our entire stack.
It sounds like the normal bell.
No, but it's a Super Bell.
But it sounds exactly like, anyway.
It's just about about every book. Yes. So
just about we're talking about every book I bought.
All right, I think it's all of them.
What's missing?
At one point, there was a lot of books being thrown around, and I just kind of ducked for cover.
Well then,
I think it's all my books. There's nothing left. I've got them all in front of me.
You duck a lot.
By the end of the show, we will have reviewed over 40 books. This has never been done before.
Yeah, no, it's all my books. Okay. Ready? So we're going to, once again, 15 seconds on the clock. I've got a little timer here, and the bell rings, and you must stop. The next person goes, and they got 15 seconds, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all right, so Ron will start us off in 3, 2, 1, go.
Avengers vs. X-Men, issue number 4, Hickman writing, Wolverine wearing a polar bear as a jacket, they're on the blue area of the moon. I give it a B. I'm still hanging by a thread with the whole event. It's still feeling very contrived to me. But the Wolverine and the polar bear with the beer was kind of...
I'm going to say with Wonder Woman 9, Tony Akin's back again for a little while. I really like all the mythology stuff. It's interesting. It has nothing to do with DC. At the beginning, I was a little bored, but by the end, I was like, all right, I'm in this. I want to know how it goes. The designs are still...
Saga number 3 continues. I love the elements he's adding in. He's bringing in new characters. He's attached this new ghost person to their group now, and that'll be an interesting sort of element to it. Plus the fact that there's a really nice cliffhanger, which makes you want to get the next issue.
Avengers vs. X-Men verse number, I don't even know, 2. X-Men finally get a win. Colossus beats Spider-Man, although at the end of it, Spider-Man and Daredevil kind of fly off in Latveria, and I can't really tell what they're swinging the webs from because it just there's no background. So I think that kind of sucked. And Stephen Niven wrote, and it's bad.
John Connor, Gods of Mars, number 3. Number 1 was pick of the week a while ago, and this is just more fun. If you read John Carter as Han Solo, it's even better. It's basically the same thing in this, and he starts a revolution, and then there's
Speaking of one character as another, in DC Universe Presents number 9, it's the new arc written by James Robinson, featuring Vandal Savage as Hannibal Lecter and his daughter as Clarice Starling, and she basically is a serial killer. He was a serial killer, and then now she needs his help to find the new serial killer.
It seems very convenient that your ding happens right as you finish.
Well, because I can watch the timer.
Uncanny X-Men number 12, Greg Land must be stopped.
He's using his own time up here.
Finally had enough.
He only had one thing to say.
Hepzibah's back, and Greg Land, bad.
Thunderbolts 174. This is some time travel, canoodling, screwing up your head kind of stuff. If you like this kind of weird time travel stuff, as I know Ron does.
Love it.
This was crazy. How is this? This book is so much fun. I don't care that they're changing the title next time.
Winter Soldier wrapped up a great arc, I thought. It's very much in the 70s vein, and it's very much in that old Brubaker Captain America vein with giant apes and Dr. Doom and Black Widow with giant hair that she shouldn't have.
Again, Avengers number 26. If you're,
it is a cheat.
I happen to be enjoying Walt Simonson purely for the facial expressions. To see the look on Novar's face at the end of this issue was fantastic. When he swore an oath, I laughed.
BPRD Hell on Earth, the Devil's Engine, number 1. This had the best action sequence at the end of they had to run off a really crowded train, and there was a big earthquake, and the train got derailed, and it was a huge disaster. And I was like, that is how you do a comic book action sequence. And I would...
Dancer number 1 continues Image's hot streak. It's an issue from the writer. Oh, fuck. There's too much going on.
You're not going to do 15 seconds on this one.
No, it's very good. Sorry, I blew it.
I really like Dancer. X-Factor number 236. There's a big, huge crossover event going in Marvel, and X-Factor is not in it. That's an accomplishment in and of its own, and they added back the heads in the upper left-hand corner of the cover. I loved it. Great, 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 great book from Peter David and Leonard Kirk.
Saucer Country number 3, Paul Cornell and Ryan Kelly. This is getting better the whole way through. This is a wacky comic book. This is fun stuff. I hope people are checking this out. Crazy alien conspiracies and just all sorts of stuff and...
Nightwing number 9 is one of the many Night of the Owls books that came out this week, and it was good. Kyle Higgins is probably doing the second best Bat book right now behind Batman. Eddie Barrows is just destroying.
Retcon.
Yeah.
Daredevil number 13. If you wondered if it was possible for there to be a bad issue of Daredevil, it can happen, and you can thank Coy Pham for that and Mark Waid. This issue was clearly not of the standard level of quality that we've come to expect from this title, and it was really, really disappointing actually by the end of it. And let's just get to Mike Allred soon.
Activity number 6. They're focusing on the backstories of these characters, going back and seeing them in different situations throughout the world's conflicts. And I thought this one was really good, just like the last one I thought was really good. We're finally getting to know some of the characters.
Green Lantern, the animated series number 2, is the best Green Lantern comic book being put out right now. And it's an adaptation of the cartoon. And that's
it says it all.
That says it all. I mean, it's just Green Lantern in space doing space stuff. That's what I want from Green Lantern book.
Cue the ding. Glory number 26. I'm really liking the direction Glory is going because it's not what I expected at all. And it just gets stranger and odder, and that last page had me where I can't wait for the next issue. So I'm really... Fuck.
Sixth Gun number 22. Drake Sinclair and Becky Moncrief are wonderful characters, and yes, they have so much life in them and so many directions that they can go as we keep going through this. And, you know, I think Brian Hurt is one of the most underappreciated artists working out there right now. Great storytelling.
Between the bell and the list and the timer and the comics, I'm completely losing my track of everything. But Catwoman number 9 was another tie-in to Night of the Owls. It was good.
Just take a breath now. Hold we have on. Time.
2 seconds. And go.
New Mutants number 42, the third chapter of the Exiled crossover. Really good, but so many words. And this is Abnett and Lanning. So many words and Asgardian, but it's really good. And having a lot of fun with it. This crossover is delivering what they promised. Breathe.
I think there's a mistake in the script.
I know.
We're going to ding it through. Supergirl number 9. I just completely lost track of everything. I'm gonna start over. Supergirl number 9 has been okay. I was really enjoying this book up until the last two issues. The last issue had George Perez art, which is good, but the story is kind of okay. But I still enjoy the character, so I'm sticking with it.
Venom number 18, Remender and is joined by Cullen Bunn co-writing it. It was good, but I can't help but to think that the Lan Medina art is taking something a little bit away from this title, as the art wasn't as dynamic and kind of explosive as I've come to expect in this book. But all in all, it was good, and Flash revealed that he is Venom to Betty, and that was a big shocker at the end.
Conan the Barbarian number 4 sees the exit, I don't know if temporarily, of Becky Cloonan. And this is also the first story that Brian Wood is doing on his own, not based on an existing Conan story. And I forgot to read it.
The Incredible Hulk number 7.1. One thing the Avengers movie taught me is I love that Hulk, and I don't really love the Hulk as he stands now in the Marvel Universe. It's not really Jason Aaron's fault, it's just sort of the whole direction otherwise. So I didn't really love this because I don't really like this Hulk anymore.
The Secret History of D.V. Cooper, number 3. I really like where this book is going. Big revelation, big reveal in this issue, and taking a turn that didn't expect, and it's just getting crazy, crazy, crazy CIA, Russian fantasy land.
Hellblazer, number 291. John turns down sex from one person because he's married, and then has sex with a hooker because it was part of a spell for somebody else, so apparently that's okay.
That doesn't count.
No, it doesn't. They screw up demon John's demon twin who had raped his niece.
Ooh. Captain Atom number 9. I still love the art from Freddie Williams II. It's very loose and sketchy, unlike his old sort of very cold and clinical style. This to current storyline, I'm not loving as much. It's an exploration of the future where Captain Atom kills everybody.
Did you just ding yourself?
I ding myself.
Batwoman number 9. Trevor McCarthy on art, J.H. Williams and W. Hayden Blackman still writing. I'm out.
I didn't even buy
this. It's a shadow of its former self. I'm out. I'm done.
Good. 4 seconds to fan.
Still done.
Nice work. I'm out too. I've been out.
I dropped it as well.
Shadow number 2, I'm going for the trifecta. I was behind on the first one, and so I didn't read the second one. But I'm looking forward to it, Garth Ennis. Apparently, I don't read Garth Ennis books. That's what's happening.
You love Preacher.
No, I mean, I do read them. I just not
Shut up, Bill.
Birds of Prey number 9, the third Night of the Owls tie-in, and this had the first. This was the art with Travel Foreman, which wasn't quite the same as the stuff on Birds of Prey. I'm Animal Man. I got 2 things to look at. Ah!
the Secret Service number 2. This is shaping up to be the Mirror Universe Wanted. This issue, the kid gets pulled into the Secret Service by his uncle, and now he's going to get trained as a spy, and it's kind of like a kid getting pulled into a world that's bigger than him, but for good guys.
Cheaters.
Wow, that was 32 books in less than 10 minutes. I love it. I love the bell.
I got assigned one book twice. I was like, sweet, I'm going to give 30 seconds.
Super Bell.
A lot to keep track of on my end. There's a lot of things to look at.
We need some sort of sound effects for the Super Bell.
Super Bell.
You get to at least look at the countdown time. I was like, is all I got? And then half of my ended with and...
Yeah. We need to figure out some way for us to see the counter. All anyway, God. So those are the.
Oh, I like the mystery.
Those were all the books we read this week. But you read books as well. You read books we didn't read, and you went to iFanboy.com. You put them on your pull list. You came back and rated and reviewed them, and then you gave us the top 5 picks of the week. And here they are. Number 5 is Lock and Key Clockworks. Number 6 with 5.8% of the picks of the week. Number 4 was Connor's pick of the week with Fantastic Four 605.1 with 8.9%. Do you think the pick of the week? Us deeming a pick of the week gives a book a bump?
Depends on the book.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes more people will pick it up because of it. Whether they think it's the best, I think that's usually on the book's merit.
I'm always curious about that. Anyway, number 3 was Justice League number 9. A lot of people agree to Connor's assertion, and 9.4% of the iFanboy community actually agree to Connor's assertion that it's a good look on Justice League number 9. Number 2, people agreeing with me on the Manhattan Project's number 3 with 11.2% of the pick of the week. So everyone agreeing that book is fantastic. But the number 1 book of the week, according to the iFanboy community, was Saga number 3. Brian K. Vaughan continues his stranglehold every week Saga comes out with 40.5% of the picks of the week.
Strong.
Yes, very strong. So there you have it. Those are the picks of the week. Reviews.
This is the wrong name. It's Andrew Gabori reviewed Green Lantern Corps number 7. There's a lot of things to do in the script this week.
Busy week.
Andrew Gabori reviewed Green Lantern Corps number 7, gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and nobody made their pick of the week. And Andrew says, let's be clear. John Stewart has killed a lot of Green Lanterns. It's kind of his thing. So it shouldn't be surprised the Alpha Lanterns are looking to take him down in order to enforce the law within the GL Corps. The premise and plotting of this issue aren't the problem. My serious misgivings come from execution. I feel like this story has been going on for some time. Maybe it's all filler for some of the Green Lantern writers from the other books who are all trying to match up the storylines, but this arc and story has been way too drawn out. We've all seen the angry lantern. We've all seen the angry lantern argues with the Green Lantern. The guard. Oh my God!
Wow, rough day.
Angry lantern.
Angry lantern argues with guardians. Did you know the guardians have no emotions and try to reason with logic alone? Of course you do. But it's explained again and again and again. Green Lantern Corps is the weakest of the two Green Lantern books I'm pulling regularly, exactly because it isn't mining new material like GL proper or New Guardians. Hopefully this title picks up with the end of this arc and we can get something new and fresh. I mean, we didn't pick this book up, but I feel like the way with all the Green Lantern books is that, and that's why I enjoy the animated ones, because I feel like I've been reading the other story for 5 years now.
Yeah.
So.
Rough one.
I don't read this one, but I can agree with you in general that the
Why is he still reading it? Come back when it's good.
Yeah.
You don't like it. A 2-story, you don't want to pay for a 2-story.
But you don't know beforehand unless you're psychic.
Yeah, I know. But if history shows you a certain way, you can always go back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it's Green Lantern Corps. You know, it's fine. It's going to keep going. Is this the right name?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Middle Management Ronin. Middle Management Ronin said of a hardcore number 1, gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and nobody has it as the pick of the week. And he says, I would like to highlight the art on this book. Stelfreeze has a dynamic feel for action pages. I love the small details he put on the fight choreography and how he's able to draw some of the, quote, seemingly important characters and made me truly believe that these people are integral to the story. It is seldom you see this in comics, and it's a welcome sight for me. The story is a high concept, but nothing revolutionary. The same can be said of the plot. We've seen these themes and plots before, but it mashed together well enough for me not to worry about it too much and went with the flow. The lettering kind of annoyed me on the first few panels mainly because it looks out of the ordinary, but you'll get used to it very quickly. Worth $2.99, just nothing special.
This was the Kirkman pilot season that never came out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stelfreeze is very good.
Yeah. Do you remember when Kirkman and Silvestri teamed up to do all the pilot season books? I didn't even realize they all didn't come out. Oh, well. Yeah.
Oh, they. I think like 2 came out.
There was a ton. Wasn't there supposed to be a ton of them?
Yeah, there were like 5 of them or whatever. Yeah. Well, all right. Stelfreeze is good, though. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so. Excellent. All right, so those are the books you you reviewed and read and picked as your picks of the week. Go to ifanboy.com/comics every week, and you do your pull list and rate and review your books. Get on the show. It's always good to hear what everyone else thinks, because we are not alone in this world at all.
I feel like I'm still crashing from the adrenaline high at the bell.
I know. Do you need
a break? That's a lot.
Well, I'll give you a break. All right, so let's dive into the emails. Our first email is from Sarah, who writes and says, "My friends and I recently did an all-ginger superhero matchup bracket. The final fight was between Wally West Flash and Jean Grey Phoenix. I hear all the time how, once you think about it, the Flash is the most powerful character in the DCU. So who do you think would win, the Speed Force or the Phoenix Force?"
All right, for our American listeners, ginger is redhead.
That's a common phrase in America.
That's a common phrase.
I feel like, well, if you're like a...
Especially these days, it's like a meme.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just helping.
Well, I, as much as I love The Flash and Wally West, I feel as if Phoenix just did that fight takes is over like
I'm
that.
I'm pretty sure that you're biased in her direction anyway, so yeah, that's not yeah, as much true. As I love.
Yeah.
You love her more.
True, yeah.
I still think it's hard for anyone to beat The Flash.
The Phoenix can eat planets!
Oh, I was just hoping to see if Ron would explode.
Yeah, that's nice. That's good. He almost did. If you were to do like a blood pressure test right now, you would definitely see a difference in numbers. That was really high pitched. I'm going to go ahead and count that as a fourth voice.
All right, there you go.
All right. So the Phoenix Force wins because it could destroy the planet the Flash is running around on.
Phoenix Force wins. Yeah.
Okay. Because she has control more easily. Oh, she doesn't have to use a treadmill to do any shit. Yeah. Can she do time?
No.
She go back in time?
No.
She controls stuff like that?
Not that I know of.
Okay, the answer is the Infinity Gauntlet.
The ultimate all fire.
Edward writes in, "So I've spent the majority of the last few days catching up on Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and I got to thinking, have any of the animated universes, Marvel or DC, ever tried to set up interlocking series? For example, Marvel, Disney could use the success of Avengers, both movie and the animated series, to set up a spin-off series, i.e. Captain America, Falcon, Hawkeye/Black Widow, Iron Man Extremis. These series would all exist within the same universe and even sometimes have crossovers and or events, just like comics. I feel like the closest thing that has ever come is the 90s Marvel animated stuff, and an argument could be made for the Timverse. So again, has this ever been attempted? Do you think it could happen, would happen, should happen? If HBO could do a five-night-a-week crossover drama in Treatment, why can't Disney or Warner Brothers do an animated one?"
In Treatment, it wasn't a crossover drama. It was just a drama that aired 5 nights a week. Yeah. Animation works too differently from comics. You can't just have multiple series running at the same time like that.
Yeah,
because the air schedules don't always match, and they have to plan for...
Sometimes you get like 5 episodes and you don't see the show for 3 months and it comes back, and it just... Cartoons are weird. Plus, I actually think they are going to do this. That's the rumor anyway. We do know they're going to cancel Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes after this season, because now that Marvel has control of the animation, like they have control of the movies, they want to do all their shows themselves. Earth's Mightiest Heroes isn't a Marvel animation show.
Really? I thought it was, because it's got Marvel people.
No, they don't control it as like they do Spider-Man. So they're going to redo a new Avengers cartoon.
Yeah, but somebody actually did that one well.
I know, but it doesn't matter to them. They want control. I know. Yeah, so they're going to. The rumor is it's going to be in the same world as the Spider-Man cartoon, which would make sense considering what they do with the movies. But it's very difficult to coordinate cartoons like that.
Yeah, well, because they have to schedule them for syndication and airing and DVD and stuff like that. Like it'd be hard to get them to sort of play into one another like that. Even making them sequential, you know, they have to do that sort of sparingly. But they did Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Didn't the Superman animated series and Batman animated series cross over?
No, because they weren't on at the same time.
They didn't cross over, but Batman appeared on Superman. I don't know if Superman ever appeared on Batman, but I always felt like the Timverse was related.
Timverse was related. All those,
that, at least that version.
Those and four then, shows were in the same world. They just weren't on at the same time. They were consecutive. Okay. Not.
No. Yeah. Superman and Batman were on at the same time at a certain point.
There was the Superman Batman hour.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And I think there were a couple of episodes where they did cross over.
I don't think so. Cause I watched the entire Superman series for that arc I wrote.
I don't think they crossed over. I know Batman.
There was a World's Finest two-parter that took place in the Superman cartoons, but didn't air in the Batman cartoons.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. That Superman show is still probably my favorite animated comic book adaptation.
It was great.
I used to love, senior year of college when it was on at 4 o'clock on Channel 11.
Did you watch Superman?
Yeah, it was the hour. I watched the whole hour. Yeah, I liked the show. I thought it was great. I thought Superman was a little more smooth around the edges. I prefer the earlier Batman stuff.
I just thought it was really violent.
It was shockingly violent and adult.
Yeah.
We've proven that Ron likes Superman outside of the comics.
Yeah, that's just a question
about that. He likes Superman outside of movies and TV shows.
Yeah.
That was a great show.
Rowan writes and says, are there any comic series or comic book films that have not been critically well received, like Ultimatum or Fear Itself, that you actually really like? Personally, I really enjoy the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie and the Shadowland storyline, which are both not considered to be successes. I liked Ultimatum, so that would be one.
Well, Ultimatum.
But he's talking about, wait, is he asking about movies?
Both.
Or any comic series or film that's not critically well received.
That's just everything.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about it a lot, but I really like the Ed Norton Hulk movie.
Yes, I like the Hulk, and I like the Ang Lee Hulk movie.
Yeah,
I did too. I did too.
And I like,
you know how I feel about Eric Bana.
I like the Spirit.
Well, that's out there. I remember liking the Daredevil movie the first time I saw it because I thought it was going to be terrible. I've seen it since then, and it wasn't good. But the first time, there was enough stuff in it, and we hadn't seen all that many comic book movies at that point. You know what I mean? Like, not like now.
That was definitely an instance of wow, this is awesome.
Yeah,
and it's actually happened because it was one of the early movies. And then when I bought the DVD when it came out. I watched it. I couldn't make it 5 minutes in after.
No. And you're like, hey, look, it's Frank Miller. You know, and they named that guy Quesada. You know, and
the director's cut's supposed to be very good.
I tried watching the director's cut.
I've heard that. I don't believe it.
That's what I've heard.
He's not a good director. So more of it isn't probably a good thing.
Yeah,
I'm trying to. No.
Shadowland was awful, by the way. So I'm sorry, Rowan, you're wrong there.
Connor, where are you on the various Batmans? Because you seem like a guy who could find something to appreciate and things, but
the movies. Yeah, Val Kilmer, George Clooney,
the Schumacher era.
Those are awful.
Yeah.
Okay, just outright.
I mean, I liked them when I was 12 when they came out. Then you know, as an adult though.
Yeah.
They're awful. I mean, but even as a kid, I knew Batman and Robin was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Batman Forever as a kid.
I remember being really upset.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even like Batman Returns that much.
I liked it a lot.
I mean, Batman, the first one, 89, that was a religion. That was...
Yeah.
I really don't think of it this way anymore, but at the time, that was a Star Wars kind of moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I didn't like Returns that much, because it was all very... It's funny, because they were... The whole thing, they were marketed as being very serious, and, like, this is not your daddy's Batman, which is ridiculous, but it was really surreal and goofy, like, in retrospect.
Yeah, it's much more Tim Burton.
Especially compared to, you know, the Chris Nolan Drown Yourself at a Funeral movies now.
Oh, so excited for Dark Knight Rises. All right. So if you've emailed us at contact@ifanboy.com, and maybe we'll read on the show.
Maybe, you're lucky. All right. On to the voicemails. Our first question's about a movie that I can't wait to see come to reality.
Hey, iFanboy, it's Ralph. So by now, everyone saw Avengers, and everyone saw Thanos was the guy at the end of the movie. So my thought is that there's a rumor that they're going to do a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. So what if they use Thanos as the big bad in Guardians of the Galaxy and have him be like this awesome badass dude that just like rips through the Guardians of the Galaxy and makes his way to Earth? And that was the setup for Avengers 2. Just a thought. Love the movie. My favorite comic book movie of all time. Love the show, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, you think? That would be awful convenient, wouldn't it?
Now listen, I heard this rumor a long time ago, but we know people. How did you hear
it? No, it's Feige went on. He said that we were going to make Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yeah, like back. Well, no, so a couple of things. So if you remember correctly, I think we talked about it on the Avengers show. In 2010 at San Diego, Marvel in their booth for about 5 minutes showed off the Infinity Gauntlet prop.
Yep.
And... when I took that legendary picture with the guy, the reflection of the guy, which I still love to this day, the guy, and Feige or whatever said in interviews of all the movies they want to do, if Avengers is successful, Guardians of the Galaxy is one of them. That said, I don't think they're going to do a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I think a Avengers movie is going to be Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's going to be them fighting Thanos in space. It's just going to be Avengers in space. I don't think we're going to see... you know, Vance Astro and or Star
Groot.
Or Groot, or you know, whether it's the modern Guardians or the old classic Guardians, I don't think we're going to see either of those because I think that's a little too outside the general movie public. But I think it'll be Avengers in space. It'll be Infinity.
Can you imagine them trying to sell Rocket Raccoon?
Yeah, exactly.
And they sold Rocket Raccoon to me.
Yeah.
So that's no small thing.
Yeah, I don't know. That's my opinion now. I don't know if you guys agree with me or not. But
there's literally no way to know.
Yeah.
I mean,
listen, we're all just shooting up our own ass here. Come on.
They haven't written a second Avengers movie yet. They don't even know if Joss Whedon's going to come back and do it.
It would be ridiculous to not do a second Avengers movie in lieu of that.
No, they're going. The question is, what are they going to do? Because we know that Thor and Captain America come next, at least what they say. So are they going to hold Thanos in the back pocket until then? Is he going to be in the Thor movie?
We know we've got Iron Man 3 is next.
Yeah.
And then Thor and then Captain America. They've said they wanted to do a Black Widow and Hawkeye movie, although I think they should join them and just do a Black Widow-Hawkeye movie.
Yeah, they can't hold the movie.
They've said they want to do Guardians of the Galaxy. They've said they want to do Doctor Strange. They've said they want to do Ant-Man has been in weird states with Edgar Wright and stuff like that.
Yeah, we're literally 30 years away at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what I would love to see is a Nova movie leading the way to a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. That would make me very happy. So
This has nothing to do with anything.
Nothing.
This is just you being...
Oh, it's me speculating. Yeah, yeah.
No, I'd like to see. Yeah. Wishful speculation.
Wishful hoping, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, Marvel's never going to get Spider-Man back from Sony, and Nova is a lot like Spider-Man.
Except not.
No, but yeah, it isn't, because it's definitely not Spider-Man.
Right, no, but in terms of like a teen kid getting power.
It's not, because people know who Spider-Man is, and Eric Larson knows who Nova is. You.
There are more Nova fans out there than just me.
Here's another one. I don't know if you noticed, but there was a Green Lantern book who's a lot more like Nova than Spider-Man. It was the Green Lantern movie, I mean. And I don't believe that they're going to make another movie like that.
Yeah.
Because it was very bad and lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think they said there's four or five movies that are actively being developed. They wouldn't. Two of them are secret. Yeah. So who knows what those two movies are? Yeah. We'll find out.
The Thanos movie. The Titan.
The Mad Titan. All right. So one more quick voicemail.
Hi, this is Jeff from Texas. I was listening to the podcast just now, and Sean brought up an interesting point about Avengers versus X-Men, and he said he's rooting for the X-Men because he's enjoying them more right now. He's enjoying the books more. And I'm rooting for the X-Men too, but I'm enjoying the Avengers more. Uncanny X-Force and Wolverine and the X-Men are the only X-Men books I read. I'm not really on Scott's side of the schism. I read all the Avengers books, but I want to see the X-Men win, because I've seen the story where the Avengers are right, but I've never seen Scott Summers put everything on the line like this, and I really want him to be right, and I would love to read that story. So, just a thought. What do you guys think?
I agree that the X-Men books are better right now, and I'm enjoying them more than the Avengers books. That being said, the Avengers should win because the X-Men are dirty mutants.
They are filthy.
Yeah.
Listen, you and your prejudice. I won't stand for it anymore.
They're different than us, and they should go away.
There should be a law.
They should have their own camps.
That's awful.
Illegal for them. Yeah. It's totally, we can say really horrible things about them because they're fictional.
They should have their own water fountains. And
wow.
This is the most uncomfortable thing that Connor has ever said.
Connor.
They're mutants.
Oh, man.
One of them could shoot shit out of his eyes. The other one can fly like a fucking bird.
Oh, God.
You know what I always found ridiculous about the whole mutant thing in Marvel Comics is that, explain to me how they're any different than a regular person with superpowers.
Right, they're not. I mean, they're genetically different. Yeah,
that's the leap of logic you've got to make in to be like, for some reason they hate mutants, but not they don't hate.
Well, because they're born different. Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, they hate Spider-Man too.
He's got powers and stuff, but you're not a mutant. Oh, you're cool with me. You're one of the good ones.
They hate Spider-Man too because he's a menace.
I mean, I guess it goes to show you the ridiculousness of prejudice to begin with, but it's just funny that you know for some reason they're okay with Miss Marvel, but they're not okay with
they're super cool with Captain America.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, yeah.
They're Aryan poster boy.
Yeah.
So in the Marvel Universe, they must be cool with like Mark McGuire and like Roger Clemens.
Oh yeah, no, they're cool. They love their Twitter accounts.
Yeah. All right. So if you have any questions, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Let's wrap this sucker up. Wow.
I have a headache from that bell segment.
You should
really. That really did a number on you.
I didn't eat lunch today, so that could be it.
Yeah, that could be it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in case you haven't heard, me and some friends of mine are throwing a comic convention this September in Vegas with Grant Morrison called MorrisonCon. I promise you it's going to be an unforgettable weekend. Go to MorrisonCon.com for all the information. Tickets are on sale now. Would love it if I can meet you and see you there. And it's going to be a lot of fun, so definitely check that out at MorrisonCon.com. Additionally, we do another podcast on iFanboy called iFanboy Don't Miss, where we talked to a creator about a book coming out this upcoming week. I talked to Kyle Higgins earlier this week about Nightwing number 9. So if you read Nightwing number 9, you could hear more about it and what Kyle Higgins was thinking going into it. And next week, Paul talks to Jeff Lemire about Justice League Dark number 9 as Lemire takes over Justice League Dark. An interesting time for the Jeff Lemire. Definitely take a listen to that. Subscribe to it on iTunes or go to ifanboy.com on Monday to listen to it. It comes out on Monday.
The Make Comics podcast is another one of our short-form podcasts that comes out every Wednesday. It's just moved to its own feed, so make sure you look that up and subscribe to that one. I'm talking to Andy Schmidt every week, former editor for Marvel and senior editor for IDW, has been around comics for a very long time on that side of the desk, and there's all sorts of fun advice that he has and big guesses that I have. That's kind of how it works. In addition, I've also got we've got some good talks loads coming up. That's as much as I'm telling you. We've got some good ones.
Similar to that, actually, I did a Independent Voices in Comics panel at a comic store here in Los Angeles. We recorded it as a podcast, and it covers similar ground to Make Comics. There were Jim McCann, writer of Mind the Gap and The Dapperman, and Dave Campo and Jeremy Rogers, who are writing the new book, their first time indie creators, Sparrow and Crow, and Ed LaRoche, who is a self-published indie creator. He puts his own books out, doesn't use Diamond. And then Darren Davis, the proprietor. We talked about the indie comics, you know, the state of indie comics, you know, the troubles making them, selling them, marketing them, to the store's perspective, all the stuff. Basically, it's an hour-long conversation going over the various different issues with indie comics these days. So check that out if you're interested. It's on the feed behind the show, Independent Voices in Comics.
And you can find that at ifanboy.com along with this podcast. Don't miss Make Comics, all the other podcasts we've got, and tons of great posts and writing and stuff like that throughout the week. If you didn't catch the Rejected Watchmen merchandise earlier this week, you missed out. That was a lot of fun. That was a high point. As well as some real interesting discussions about comics, both from a critique standpoint and a business standpoint. We cover it all. So go to ifanboy.com. You can see it all there. And you can stay on top of it and not miss a thing by following us on Twitter, twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy.
You can write to us at contact@ifanboy.com, which is an email address, so you'll have to use an address and a mail app for that. Or you can use your telephone, or you can even do it through Skype and call 888-FANBOYS-326-2697 to leave us a voicemail. The purposes of these can be myriad. You can ask us questions that we can put on the show. You can ask us inappropriate questions that we will delete. You can... That happens. You can, of course, leave us a voicemail for the show. But if you do and you want it to be on the show, be cognizant of the fact that the shorter and more succinct you are, the better. And say your name and where you're from at the beginning, because that's better, too.
Yes.
Even though sometimes you'll talk in a way that we'll know exactly where you're from.
Finally, if you like the show or the Make Comics show or any of the shows we do or any of the podcasts you listen to, please go to iTunes and write a review. It helps the shows. It helps the shows find an audience. It takes no time at all. Just put a couple words in there and a star rating and be on your way. You know, have a nice day.
We're not asking for a lot.
Off with you, my boy.
Out you go.
All with you.
Wow.
Ginger wee foo.
We changed the world this week, guys. We added something new to the comics podcasting landscape I didn't think could be done, but over 40 reviews in one show, thanks to the Super Bell.
We're not counting the ones that I didn't read?
No, I'm keeping those in.
Okay. Shoot.
That's going to be your pull quote on some book someday.
I didn't read this.
Didn't get a chance to read it, iFanboy.
That would be the best.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Who edits these?
All right, so until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick the Week Cop, blah, 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 blah.
Pick the Cockcast.
3, 2. Hey, welcome to the iFan. Why is this is different? Who changed this?
It's not.
3, 2.
Just a suggestion.
3.
Why is the L in my name lowercase?
3.
Where?
That doesn't really count as an error in the script, but. I don't know. It's diminishing somehow.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.